This podcast is not legal advice and should not be relied upon as such. You should always obtain legal advice about your specific circumstances.
Hi, and welcome to our Smarter Lawcast on business restructuring and being risk ready. In this episode, we're discussing the risks that directors face when their companies are struggling financially. My name is Scott Butler, and I'm a partner in Hall & Wilcox's dispute resolution practice, specialising in restructuring and insolvency. And today I'm joined by David Dickens, a fellow partner of mine in Hall & Wilcox's dispute resolution practice, who also specialises in restructuring and insolvency. And David and I are both members of Hall & Wilcox's restructuring and turnaround team, which focuses on assisting underperforming businesses to restructure their business affairs so that they can survive and thrive. Welcome, David.
Thanks, Scott. Great to be here.
So today we're talking about the risks directors face when their businesses are in financial difficulty and what directors can do to deal with those risks. And David, to set the scene for the audience's benefit, we're looking at a situation where a company's financial position has got to a point where it probably has creditors who are well overdue and are chasing payment. It may not have paid some of its tax on time, like GST. Sometimes it may not be actually paying its employees super on time to save money and redirect that money where it's most needed. And so it's really, you know, trading from week to week from a cash flow point of view. And in the restructuring and insolvency and turnaround industry, which we practice in, that's, you know, we refer to this situation as being in the company being in the zone of insolvency. And you know, there are, you know, serious consequences for directors when a company becomes insolvent, and we'll talk about those shortly. But I guess then a good place to start would be to discuss what being insolvent actually means.
Thanks, Scott. That's a very good question. It's a word, insolvency is a word everyone has heard, I'm sure, and has some sense that it is not a good thing. But actually, what do we mean precisely when we say the word insolvency? Well, there is fortunately a pretty clear answer, and that is insolvency is a cash flow test. So it's not about assets or liabilities, it's about cash flow. And it is about, can you meet your debts as and when they fall due? So if you have a payroll run next Thursday, as we sit here today, do you think you're going to be able to pay it? Do you either have the money in the bank account or will it be coming in? Rent that's due on the first of next month, are you going to be able to pay that? And thinking ahead, to all those payments that every business needs to be able to make, are you going to be able to pay those as they fall due? Now, of course, you've got to look at that kind of practically. You don't have to have all the money in the bank account now. Who does? You'll be relying on payments coming in from customers. There may be some financial support that you or a bank or someone else is providing. So you can take all of those things into account, but it comes back to almost looking at it from the creditor's point of view of, are you going to be able to pay them when they fall due? Now, sometimes, of course, that might not be possible to the exact day. Perhaps you're not going to be able to make rent on the first of the month this time, but you've got a major customer that you know is going to pay you on the 5th, so a few days later, and you'll be able to pay the rent then. So something like that, you might say, is a temporary liquidity crisis, and most people would say if that's your only issue, you're probably still solvent despite that little gap there. But on the other hand, if that's happening a lot and you have what we call an endemic cash shortage, then you're probably more looking at the insolvency space. Now, insolvency is also something that when you're in it, unfortunately, you'll know it. You'll have the stress of creditors chasing. You'll be making round payments to your creditors. You'll be juggling creditors, thinking, who do I really need to pay now? Who can I just push off? What letters do I have to deal with? What can I ignore? You'll probably have overdue lodgements, and the business is probably unprofitable as well, or, you know, something has caused this. So unfortunately, you will know it when you're in it.
Yeah, that's actually a good summary. And so thinking then from a director's perspective, if their company is insolvent, what risk does that pose to a director?
So insolvency is a special word under the Corporations Act, and it brings about for directors the key consequence, which is personal liability for insolvent trading. So the great thing about companies, of course, is it's a separate legal entity and no one else, the starting point is liable for a company's obligations. But if as a director you allow the company to trade while it's insolvent, then you become personally liable for those debts. So that's why as lawyers, we talk about insolvency a lot, because it's a very important line in the sand that once a company is insolvent, any debts that are then incurred, so not existing debt, but any new debt that the company incurs, the directors will be personally liable for. And you know, unfortunately, that can quickly turn into quite a large personal claim against the directors. Now, our laws around that are quite strict, and there are defences and things, but you really do want to certainly try to avoid trading the company while it's insolvent. Sometimes, of course, and you see this a fair bit, people, they're taking that leap of faith, or perhaps another way of putting it is the strategy of hope almost, to try and just trade through or get out of this. So, okay, things are bad, but Christmas is around the corner and we'll be trading better then, or hopefully this new finance will come in. So there can be times, and it can be done. You may be insolvent, but things may get better and you may be able to trade through it. But there's obviously risk once you are insolvent in continuing to trade. And if the hope strategy doesn't work out and the company unfortunately ends up in liquidation, then directors will face those claims.
Yeah, no, it's a real balancing act, isn't it, in terms of the risk posed for insolvent trading and the potential upside if you can trade your way out of it. And I guess so during that, like if you are deciding, well, I'm going to attempt to trade my way through this, are there any sort of options available for a director in that circumstance to try and avoid insolvent trading liability along the way?
We've got something there called Safe Harbour, which is relatively new. That was introduced by Malcolm Turnbull a few years ago when he wanted to create a bit more of an entrepreneurial and also a rescue sort of culture in Australia, and to get a bit more risk-taking by directors so that hopefully we have more unicorn and amazing companies here onshore in Australia. So Safe Harbour, the idea here is that you can actually trade a company while insolvent without facing that personal liability, but it's a fairly strict process and there's a few boxes you need to tick. So if you are concerned about solvency, you can look at Safe Harbour to protect yourself. And what you basically need to do is find an appropriately qualified advisor. So you bring in someone external as an advisor. You need to come up with a plan that you think is likely to lead to a better outcome for the company as a whole. You need to make sure your lodgements are up to date and a few other things. And then you go and execute that plan. And what the Safe Harbour does is it protects you that if plan A doesn't work and unfortunately you end up in plan B, then you will have a defence to insolvent trading while you were executing that plan. Now, the plan may be simple or complex. It could be as simple as I'm just going to wind down and sell the business and you know that there's going to be a deficit at the end of it. But if you're able to keep trading it and incurring a few debts during that process, you'll think there'll be it'll be better off. Or it could be very complex and you're going to restructure the business, move parts around, right size it, do all sorts of clever steps that you've worked on with your advisor, and it might take a year, you think, to turn the business around. And again, you follow that. And the idea, of course, with Safe Harbour is if all goes well, you never need to think about it or rely on it. So the funny thing is you don't know if a business has gone through it, because there's also no requirement, unless perhaps you're listed. That's a whole separate conversation. But for a general private company, there's no need to disclose that you are currently relying on the Safe Harbour mechanism. So many companies out there could have gone through that. The directors relied on it. Plan A worked and they're still trading and no one knows that they went through that. One of the challenges of Safe Harbour, of course, is when you need an advisor in there and there's quite a few sort of boxes you need to tick to be able to rely on the process and for it to be in place, that obviously comes at a cost, both financial and just the extra time involved there. So sometimes for companies, particularly in the SME space, that it may not be well suited for them. Other techniques you have there, if you are facing insolvency, is to simply stop trading, because if you're not incurring debts, then you're not going to have personal liability because it only applies to debts that are incurred while you're insolvent. So if you simply stop new debt being created, then you won't be liable. And what is often then done as well is putting the company into some form of formal insolvency process, like small business restructuring, voluntary administration, or liquidation.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. And I think we're going to just touch on what small business restructuring and voluntary administration means and how they operate a bit later. But sort of just thinking about what you've said, I think you can really understand, and certainly I, over the years have seen directors deciding to continue to trade even in the face of personal liability for insolvent trading. And often they've they do this, they've built up the company from nothing, they've invested their life's work in it, and so letting that go is really difficult. And there's also pride at stake for directors and reputational risk. No director wants to have to tell their colleagues or their loved ones or friends that their business has failed. And so it really is a very difficult situation that directors face, and it's a difficult decision-making process for them.
Absolutely. And at the point of insolvency, unfortunately, the directors have probably put almost all of their own assets into the business to try and support it. And that is, you and I see that a fair bit. And it's completely understandable, of course. But it means there is so much riding on the success or otherwise of the company. And something else you need to be aware of course, is personal guarantees, which can be just or even more significant in the insolvent trading space. Everyone knows, I think, that unless you're a listed company, the banks will probably require a personal guarantee from the directors. Some suppliers will as well. So from a director's perspective, if you know you're liable under all of that, insolvent trading, while it's something we talk a bit about as lawyers in this space, it's unfortunately just one of the many risks that someone is facing already. And so people can feel that they don't really have anything to lose. So they'll bet the house effectively and try and keep trading through and just hope that they can turn things around in some way. And as we said, sometimes that works, but sometimes it doesn't. So it's very challenging. And as well, often where a company does go into liquidation and creditors are feel aggrieved by that, and they're looking to pursue the director. There's just no assets there, again, because everything has gone into the business, and it can be quite sad when that's happened. And people have built these things up over their working lifetime, but then it all becomes at risk when things go bad.
Yeah, no, and we'll talk a bit later about some options that directors, might have to try and make sure that the worst doesn't eventuate. But before we get there, I mean, the next thing that directors potentially have to face in this situation is being personally liable for some of the company's tax debts under the what's referred to as the director penalty regime. So that's another thing that directors have to look out for. And David, can you just briefly explain how that personal liability can arise for tax debts?
Sure. So people are often surprised to hear that the Australian Tax Office is not a priority creditor in insolvency. I think in the past, a long time ago, it may have been, but certainly not for a while. So the starting point is the Tax Office is just another unsecured creditor in the main body there. But in saying that, while it is just an unsecured ordinary creditor, the ATO actually has some quite powerful and quite unusual tools at its disposal that actually do allow it to exert quite a bit of pressure and in some instances actually get paid in priority to other creditors, notwithstanding that it's just meant to be one of the ordinary unsecured creditors. Now, one of the biggest tools that it has is the ability to issue what's called a director penalty notice. This is a document that's sent from the ATO to a director of the company. And it informs the director that they themselves may be personally liable for the tax debts of the company. And these can be noticed where the company has defaulted on its tax obligations. And it can make the, as I said, make the director personally liable. Now, there's two types of director penalty notices. There's a 21-day director penalty notice and a lockdown director penalty notice. I'll call them DPNs from now on. So 21-day DPN, that will say on it that the director needs to take specified actions within their 21-day period. And if they do that, then the director won't have personal liability. The other type, the lockdown DPN, unfortunately, with those, as the name suggests, the personal liability has already attached to the director, and there's not really much or anything that the director can do. You're already personally liable at this stage. Now, of all the documents that you can get in the mail as a director, these some of the most serious, and it is very important to act quickly because that, particularly that 21-day period, is very, very important that you take advice and deal with it in that time. And we see these a bit. It's a classic sort of matter for a lawyer that the client calls up and says, "Hey, I just got this DPN in the mail. What's that?" And there's a need to act very quickly there and make some prompt decisions. Otherwise, there will be this personal liability attaching to the director, and it's quite a very strong regime and a tool that the ATO has there. And what it often does in practice is it brings matters to a head. So for a DPN to be issued, there needs to have been non-compliance with tax obligations, and that's led to this ATO action. Often there may have been payment plans or something that was there with the ATO that wasn't complied with. So there's probably been a bit going on before this has arrived. And this is often what brings it all to a head and will lead to a formal appointment of the company. The challenge, of course, is you're doing this in a very short time frame, and so you don't have much runway or space or options to try and do something that may be a bit more effective.
Yeah. And just sort of to round that out, so the director's penalty notice regime is relevant to a company's to certain only certain kinds of taxes. So it's relevant to PAYG withholding tax, GST, and super primarily. And the key for the liability or the notices of DPNs to be issued is that you haven't reported those on time and haven't paid them on time. And there's a bit of a for everything but super. If you don't pay them, but you do report within 3 months of the due date of reporting, then you won't get issued with a lockdown DPN. You'll only get issued with effectively that 21-day DPN that David mentioned. And you can do a few things within the 21 days to avoid that personal liability, like putting your company into a small business restructuring or a voluntary administration or liquidation. And in relation to super, you need to have reported your super liability and or by the due date, which is the due date for the lodgement of a superannuation guarantee charge notice. So that's only 28 days effectively after the quarter in which the superannuation is due. And if you haven't paid and or reported it by that period, it becomes a lockdown liability. So it's a tricky area, and you really need to get advice. But I suppose the message here is, if you possibly can, pay those amounts on when they're due. And if you can't pay them when due, at least report them to the tax office. So, David, you mentioned earlier having an appropriately qualified advisor when you were discussing the safe harbour regime against insolvent trading. But irrespective of whether you qualify for safe harbour, one of the best things directors can do, I think, in these circumstances is to bring in the help of an experienced turnaround advisor. Between you and I, we've worked on many matters over the years where turnaround advisors have come in and saved businesses that would otherwise have collapsed. And, really, I can't emphasize how much a good turnaround expert can help. They have so many tricks in their bags that they're able to implement quickly to stem losses and stabilize things. They really are an invaluable addition to any situation where the business is struggling. And another good thing that turnaround advisors understand is the stress that directors and the management team are under. You know, it's a very stressful situation when things aren't going well, and good turnaround advisors give support. They assist with the strategies to deal with those stresses. And, you know, one of the most knowledgeable people that I know in this area, from a turnaround perspective, is Michael Fingland at Vantage Performance, who's spent years studying techniques to deal with stress, and assisting directors in this space.
Absolutely. Turning around and restructuring a business is hard work, and it is a fairly specialized area, because to do it well, the advisor needs to understand the formal insolvency process and how priorities work, the employee entitlements, basically what the world looks like for a company if it is going into administration or liquidation. And they've got to understand as well the perspectives of the many, many stakeholders that you have with companies, and you need to try and get, you need all of them on board for this to work. You need someone that knows how a bank will think and look at it, so secured creditors, landlords, employees, suppliers, unions, customers, all of those. If you're trying to execute a turnaround, you really need to see the world through their eyes and make sure that you can pitch how this is going to work well for all of them. And hopefully there's, you know, a new investor or some cash injection coming on board as well. And as I've mentioned a few times, you need some runway for this. You know, if payroll's due on Friday and you can't pay it, it's very hard to do things at that point. You've got very, very little space. If you're having these conversations earlier, you've got more informal workouts available. And sometimes, you know, if it's a secured debt that's the issue, it can just be working it through with the bank and putting in place some sort of forbearance period or a workout or a controlled asset sale, or yeah, something like that. That means you don't need to go through a formal process. But the longer it goes on, the less options you end up with, because as always, cash is king. And as you're burning through that, the less you've got, the less options you can execute. So we are able to work with companies and execute those informal workouts or restructurings where you've got the time and the space and the resources to do so. Now, if the company can't be saved in that way, then you're probably looking at a formal insolvency process. So that's where you have a formal appointment of someone external, and the company is going into, if you're looking at restructuring, probably voluntary administration or small business restructuring. And the aim there being to come out with a new day one balance sheet and a sustainable business on the other side. I'll talk about those a little bit. Small business restructuring. This is a new regime. This was introduced in late 2020 by Josh Frydenberg, obviously as part of the COVID packages that were coming in. And it was introduced because there was a concern that there was going to be a large number of Australian small businesses that would have problems on their balance sheet, obviously due to COVID lockdowns and things, but were otherwise, you know, good businesses that had been fine pre-COVID, would be fine afterwards, but they were going to have some liabilities that accrued there that would make them on their face sort of insolvent and unable to trade. So the idea was to introduce a simpler regime that's cheaper, faster, and easier to use than our other more formal processes like voluntary administration. So small business restructuring or SBR, there's hasn't been used as much because it's relatively new, and the key criteria is that your liabilities need to be under $1 million. But it's great because it allows the directors to remain in control of the company. So we call it debtor in possession, and you still need someone external, but it's a lighter touch. And you know, you effectively put up a plan, have creditors vote, and if it gets approved, you're off and running, and you've restructured the company. The other main tool that we have in Australia for formal restructuring is voluntary administration. And this has been around a lot longer since the 90s. And this effectively lets you put up something that we call a deed of company arrangement or a DOCA. And the simplest way of explaining that is it's just a formal settlement between the company and its creditors. And there's a cram down mechanism in that if you can get a majority of creditors voting for it, then everyone is bound by it, or putting to one side secured creditors. So this lets you restructure the company by compromising the debts of the company, and then it's able to continue trading. And it's a very flexible tool, because just like a settlement deed, there's many, many ways you can structure it, whether it's the acquisition of some or all of the business, or it stays in the same entity. You've got a lot of options there, and that's a tool we use fairly commonly when you're trying to restructure a business. But it takes a bit more time and does have a bit more cost, and the risk of repeating myself, the sooner you're able to engage with that process, it's much more likely that the option is there as well.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. That's actually really, really great summary. So just a couple of more things that we wanted to cover today. But one thing that is really important to me, and I just wanted to make sure that we talked about, was the risks associated with taking advice from untrustworthy and unqualified so-called pre-insolvency advisors. And you know, there are a number of these firms out there in this space that prey on stressed and desperate directors by promising to take care of their situation. And they charge large fees and use unethical practices, such as transferring the business and assets to related entities for little or no consideration, and leaving unsecured creditors behind, most often the tax office. The thing about these schemes is they expose the directors to personal liability for breach of their duties to act in the company's best interests and for a proper purpose. And directors are also exposed to personal liability through other provisions under the law, under the Corporations Act, which have been brought in recent years to deal with some of these situations. And one of those is the laws aimed at creditor defeating dispositions, and also laws aimed at transactions that avoid the payment of employee entitlement. So just really want to make sure that, you know, the directors are listening to this podcast, think carefully about getting advice and implementing structures from advisors who promise something which just sounds, you know, too good to be true.
Absolutely. Directors need to be very wary of any advisor that's recommending those kinds of strategies to them. And the best thing a director can do is make sure you're getting advice from someone that's member of a reputable industry association like ERITA or the TMA, and they have strict codes of conduct that govern their members. And also, you know, you've got an advisor that actually knows what they're talking about there. We see this a bit, and we know there are a multitude of pre-insolvency advisors out there of varying skills and ethics, I think it'd be fair to say. And I think there are instances where they sort of, you know, keep an eye on the winding up or ASIC lists and will proactively contact directors. And I think I would go by the old adage, if it sounds too good to be true, then it probably is.
And so just to clarify, so David mentioned those industry bodies being ERITA, that's the Australian Restructuring Insolvency Turnaround Association, and the TMA, that's the Turnaround Management Association of Australia. Well, thanks very much, David, for all your insights today. As I said on a earlier podcast in this series, one of the things we see too often is that clients leave it too late to get help, and that gives them less options and makes effecting a turnaround or a restructure much more difficult. And David certainly highlighted that today. So the sooner a director acts and gets assistance and starts to work on a turnaround and restructuring plan, the better the outcome will be. Thanks everyone for listening today. As always, please get in touch with us if you have any questions. You can find our details on our website, which is hallandwilcox.com.au, or connect with us on LinkedIn. If you enjoyed today's episode, then rate, review, or follow our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you.